This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As a black South African photojournalist, Peter Magabane risked his life during the days of apartheid to document what was really happening in his country. He took pictures of the Sharpeville Massacre in 1960 and the Soweto Uprising in 1976. He was the first black South African to win a photography award in his country, but he was also punished by the government for his work with imprisonment, torture, solitary confinement, and a 5-year banning order. Now he's documenting life in the new South Africa for Time magazine. Last week, Peter Magabane was honored with the Mother Jones Leica Lifetime Achievement Award, given jointly by the Mother Jones Magazine International Fund for Documentary Photography and the Leica Camera Group. I asked Peter Magabane about a photo taken June 18, 1976, in Alexandra as the Soweto Uprising spread to other townships. In the photo, two women are screaming. The older woman is physically supporting the younger one, who has just lifted up her T-shirt, revealing a bullet wound that has ripped open her abdomen.
It was the morning on the 18th of June when I decided to go to Alexandra Township after learning that the police were... have entered Alexandra Township to stop people from demonstrating. So when I got there, I walked around, and the first thing I did was I went to the nearby beer hall where everything was happening. There were these two women who were standing not far away from me. I was taking pictures of them as they got excited and excited. The next thing I saw, in fact, I had a shot from behind me which oozed past my ear and pierced this woman's stomach. Fortunately, she didn't fall and there was someone to help her. And I was there to take the pictures. I just kept on shooting. I didn't stop shooting. After that, the woman was rushed to hospital. Whether she did survive or not, I don't know.
So this bullet that struck her whizzed right past you and nearly struck you?
Yes, it did.
Did you feel it going by?
No, I just had the ooze sound, ooh, past me, you know. And after taking one shot, I fell to the ground. I got up again and continued taking pictures of this woman screaming.
You were nearly wounded while taking this photo. Were you ever wounded during protests that you were photographing?
Well, yes, June 16, long after that, I was my nose was fractured in Alexandra Township by a police captain who wanted me to expose my film of pictures that I had been taking of the police beating up people. When I refused, he hit me on the face, fracturing my nose. But I didn't feel that pain. The pain that I felt was to be made to expose my film into light and lose the images that would be history today. That was more painful to me than the shot that I got on my nose, because at least I knew that with my nose it could be taken care of, but the images that I lost, I couldn't recapture those images.
So it sounds like you had a double sense of purpose. One was to document what was happening then and expose that to the world, but the other was to preserve those images for history so that people would remember what happened.
Yes, it was important for me to document for history, and also important for me to document for the outside world to know what is going on in South Africa, how apartheid is operating, so that people in other countries can apply pressure on South Africa, which was the theme at the time. And of course, countries around the world did apply pressure when seeing some of our images that came from South Africa.
You have a whole book of photos on the Soweto Uprising. The uprising in 1976 started as a student protest against the compulsory use of Afrikaans language in the classroom, and that spread into just like larger riots of protest, and those riots started in Soweto, spread to other townships, and were met with police massacres of people who were protesting. When did you enter the scene?
The very first day of June 16, I was there. In fact, I helped the press go in because the students didn't want the press to come in at the time, fearing that the photographs that I'd taken would be used by the police to identify them. But I strongly said to the students that an uprising without documentation is no cause at all. You needed to have people that would record what you're doing so that the world can see if you're mowed down by the police or whatever soldiers come in. They should see how you are being killed, and your relatives and parents should also be able to identify you when you are missing if you have been captured in the pictures. And of course, they did agree, and I said it should not only be black journalists that are allowed. Everyone that is a journalist has an important part to play. And they did let in all kinds of people to document the struggle.
The students were first worried that any photographs you took could be used against them because the police could identify them from the photographs. Do you know if your photographs were ever used that way by the police?
No. I know, for instance, when I was working for the Daily Mail, that the police wanted all pictures taken on June 16. But I told my editor, Raymond Lowe, that under no circumstances should my pictures be released. Fortunately, I had all the pictures with me and the contact prints and everything, so there was nothing in the office that the police could lay their hands on.
Did you hide them?
No, I didn't hide them. I just kept them at home. I knew that I was not going to release them. Under no circumstances would I have released them.
How did you learn to get around with your camera in the middle of riots?
Well, I didn't need any education at all. One says to himself, "Here you are. You want to document this. So you go into the crowd and look around and see how safe you are. Once you realize that you are safe, but in South Africa you're never safe because the police are always watching. So what you do is you are watching what you are photographing, and at the same time you are watching who is following you. So you had two things to do. In most cases, you had to hide your camera. Your cameras. I operated with two cameras, a 35mm and a 105 lens. Didn't use any big lenses because that would have exposed me to the police. The police would have been able to see me from afar. And I was able to work with those two cameras. Sometimes I would put them in underneath my dust coat or under my jacket and operate under those circumstances.
Did a black man with a camera just automatically spell trouble for the police?
Not necessary. Any person that is having a camera those days, he was or she was known as an enemy of the state, because they knew very well that the material that we were taking was not only for South African consumption, it was also for the world at large.
There are several pictures of people who have been tear gassed and who are temporarily disabled by that. I'm wondering how you were able to use your eyes to take photographs when people are being blinded by the tear gas around you.
Well, I had learned not to rub my eyes, never to use water, but just to try and close my eyes. Sometimes I would shoot closing my eyes. I don't know how I got other pictures focused, but some are a little bit out of focus. But it is not the sharpness of the picture that makes the picture. It is the contents in the picture. So I was able to succeed in beating the tear gas.
My guest is Black South African photojournalist Peter Magubane. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. South African photographer Peter Magubane is my guest, and he documented the apartheid era protests. Now he's documenting post-apartheid South Africa for Time magazine. There are two photographs of you being arrested by the police. I wonder who took the photos and what was your reaction when yourself being documented?
Well, it was good for a change that there was someone to document when I was being manhandled and arrested by the police. Otherwise, the world would not have seen how difficult I had to operate under. It was not only that arrest. There have been several arrests. There has been the detention of 1969, where I was detained for 586 days and banned for 5 years, which meant I could no longer practice as a photographer because I wasn't allowed to interact with more than one person. I wasn't allowed to leave Diep Kloof, where I am, which is a small suburb. I had to report to the police once a week. It was difficult for one to operate, which means, I have lost something like 7 years of my photographic career. Then in 1985, I was shot with 17 buckshots below my waist, which are still embedded in my body. I was left for dead. Had it not been for the children that had come to bury their colleague, I probably wouldn't be alive today.
Who shot you? How were you shot?
I was shot by the police. The police came and just opened fire on the crowd that was standing there.
This was at a funeral?
This was at a funeral in Natalspruit. The person that was running in front of me, he was hit, I don't know where, what part of the body, but he collapsed in front of me and never regained consciousness, and he died. Fortunately, I was pulled into this house by the students who were there.
I think most of the 586 days that you were in prison, you were in solitary, is that right?
Yes.
How did you keep your sanity during that period? That's a really long time.
Well, the first 3 months are very difficult months because your mind is still outside. As soon as you hit the fourth and the fifth month, you begin to forget out the outside world. You concentrate on where you are, the grounds in which you are. So what you simply do is you say, well, there's nothing that I can do. I just have to wait until such time that I am out of this mess.
So you just put yourself in waiting mode.
That's right.
What were you in prison for? Were you officially charged with anything?
Well, they never tell you why you are detained. But when they finally charged us, we charged with some section of the Communism Act. Now, if you look at me, I don't look like a communist, and I don't believe in communism. But I was charged under the Communism Act, and I was banned under some section of the Communism Act. Anything that you did, whether you reported negatively about South Africa, if you get arrested, you will be charged under a certain act of the Communism Act, you know.
During the apartheid era, were there assignments that you could not be sent on because you were black?
No. I refused from the very onset when the newspapers that I worked for, Drum Magazine, knew my stand, The Rand Daily Mail, which was a liberal paper, knew my stand. I did not want to be used as a token black. I did not want to go to places where I am told there were no places that I was told you can only go there and you can't go there. I told them if I'm a journalist, I should be able to go everywhere. If those people don't want me, it is up to them. There is no assignment that was big or small for me. I have always done what I thought should be done by a human being and a proper journalist.
Did that mean that there were times you had to sneak into a place because a black person either wasn't allowed or would be too conspicuous?
Well, I have done sneaking around for a long time. I remember in Zirist, I had to hide my camera in a half a loaf of bread. This was a Leica 3F, which I hid in a half a loaf of bread to be able to cover the trial of the women protesters who were protesting against the issuing of passes to men, women, and children. The press was banned in Zirast. We were the only newspaper that went in. This is Drum magazine. I went in there with my cameras. I hid the camera in a half a loaf of bread. When that was done, I bought a pint of milk and put the camera inside the pint of milk and continued working. When I realized that the game might be over now, I decided to leave, and we had pictures. No other paper had pictures.
You're now taking pictures for Time magazine. What interests you most in documenting post-apartheid South Africa?
What interests me most now is the traditions. I am busy working on the vanishing cultures in South Africa, because we were made to hate ourselves by the apartheid government. Because if you dare say that you come from KwaZulu, you wouldn't be able to work in Johannesburg without the suitable permit. So because of that, we had to hate ourselves and say, no, we don't come from that area. We have nothing to do with that area. Anyone that came from a rural area would never be able to work in the city. So we never wanted to deal with ourselves. But now I find that there's so much richness in this. There's so much love and beauty in our people, in their traditions. And no one has ever done the project that I am involved in now that I know of. But I know when I'm through with it, it will be a beautiful historic document, because our children, their great-great children, will be able to see as to how and where their great parents or their parents come from.
And the book that you're referring to is Photos of Rural South African Tribes?
Yes.
Do you know what tribe your family is descended from?
Well I'm a Zulu.
I'm wondering if any of your photographs from the past are being used now, for instance, by the Truth Commission or by other people trying to investigate crimes of the past?
Well, the June
16, 1976...
The Soweto Uprising. Pictures there have been used by the commission.
By the Truth Commission?
Yes. And they are still going to be used in another hearing, which comes up the middle of June.
How are they used by the Truth Commission?
Well, they're used by the Truth Commission as an exhibit, and also people to show the brutality of the police, what the police did when they got in there, and how people were killed.
How different is your day-to-day life and your life as a photographer? Obviously, you no longer have to hide your camera when you're on assignment.
Well, this is why one can be more artistic, because it is not shoot and run. You have the time to look at your subject. You have the time to set your subject. You have the time to think before you take. Whereas during apartheid time, you didn't have that. You had to contend with what you're doing
at that time, and also worry about the police.
When you were taking pictures during the apartheid period, you had two missions. One was to document what was happening, to show people in South Africa and around the world, and the other was to preserve these images for history. What is your motivation now?
Well, I have not changed from that kind of documentation. If my government, the black government, does the same things that the Botha F.W. de Klerk government did, the apartheid government did at the time, I will still expose them. I am a journalist first, before anything. I am there to serve the public. I am there to satisfy myself, direct my camera properly so that the world can see what is happening. If the present government is not doing the same things as the apartheid government, I will do the good things they are doing and show the world.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I thank you too.
And congratulations on your award.
Thank you very much.
Peter Magubane is a winner of a Mother Jones Leica Documentary Photography Award. Photos by Magubane and other award winners are on view at the UNICEF Exhibition Gallery in New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.